Tuesday, I broke my wrist, and Thursday I had surgery, and today I just want to say again how grateful I am for practice of Buddha's way. It is the most extraordinary thing. I had heard, of course, you know, that Dharma is completely and freely available all the time, everywhere. But it's quite different when you actually experience that to be true. So this little mishap was another occasion to study that and see, is it true? Is it true? And it sure is. So I know I mentioned this to some of you individually just because I was so tickled to see once again that Dharma is alive and kicking no matter what our circumstances. This is so important to us. It's so important that our clear eye of birth and death is always right there, even when things look pretty grim. When I was lying in a rain puddle on the BART platform, having heard the discouraging snap of the bone in my arm. Okay, I really better practice now. This is really a good time. Sure enough, it was. And I don't know if this is why, but for some reason, everyone I met, everyone I interacted with, from the BART agent all the way through to the surgical people on Thursday, were so wonderful. They were so attentive and friendly. Genuine. I thought there must be something wrong. You know, this is not how American healthcare is usually spoken of. But the whole experience was wonderful. And practice must have had something to do with that. Not so much my own great virtue or skill, but the way that practice opens worlds and universes to us without our particular conscious involvement. It just happens. So this is a great encouragement, and flies in the face of some reading that I've been doing recently. A Zenist that some of us know wrote a book about his experience in Japan, which some of you may have seen. It's quite entertaining. I'm only about halfway through. And while in Japan, this chap encountered some people who had nothing but scorn for Westerners practicing, particularly Westerners practicing in the West. And the more I read, the more I was appalled at the anger and aggression and kind of alienation that was being expressed by these folks who felt that not only could you only practice in Japan, but only with one or possibly two people. And everything else was an utter waste of time. This was so ridiculous on the face of it. I was shocked to see that there were people who really honestly believed that. And in fact, I think there's still some of those. And yet the practice that was described as being favored by these folks was so harsh and so cruel that I found myself unable to see where Buddha's compassion and loving kindness and affection for all beings was anywhere visible. This notion that one should do whatever one can to inconvenience and discomfort oneself, even to the point of damaging one's health, because that made one's practice better. This is some kind of childish nonsense. And I guess I just wanted to hop on my soapbox here and say, if you encounter that kind of thinking, please dismiss it politely if you can. If not, then do what you must. But if you run into one of these folks who says, "You Western Zenist, you're ridiculous. You don't know anything about this. You should go to Japan where there's real practice, or at least there was." Now the thought is, well, when, you know, so-and-so passes away, that's it. All zen. Gone. Forever. It's like, come on, kids. This is not kindergarten, right? This is not comic book life. So, anyway, I totally recommend this book as an excellent read and as a way to see how someone very, very good-hearted and serious and sincere practitioner encountered this bitter and twisted version of Buddha Dharma and survived. So, yes?
Was that from Westerners or...
Hmm?
Was that from Westerners or Japanese people?
There were some Westerners, but the context was strongly Japanese for their practice. And this particular place or places were famous for their, quote, austerity, unquote. But I don't think that's the right word. One chap has these deformed hands from these constant cold winters, all blistered and swollen knuckles and everything. This was held to be virtuous. It's like, I don't see where Buddha said anything like that. This is just strange to me. So Zen has this association sometimes, and I strongly recommend that when you encounter that, you politely turn the other way or suggest that maybe that's not how it has to be. And that even in the midst of discomfort, which as far as I can see, we needn't go looking for because it comes looking for us, practice is wide open and available, and beings are surrounding us and ready to help us with our practice if we are ready to meet them. So I'm happy about that and encouraged by it. And in spite of being rather uncomfortable this morning, because the surgery is recent enough that I'm still in some pain, I find that I don't have to go anywhere special to practice. I don't have to move anywhere from the circle of this discomfort, this inconvenience. Right here is perfect, and it's great to be sharing this with you all. We're supposed to have a little ceremony this morning, our ceremony of the full moon, and of course you're welcome to stay and enjoy that with us. It involves a lot of bows. I think I'll probably be doing standing bows myself, and you're all welcome to do standing bows if you'd like to stay. This ceremony, as you know, is mainly about re-encountering and announcing our commitment to practicing with the Bodhisattva precepts. We do this every month on the full moon. And so we go through the refuges and homages to various Buddhas, and avowal of karma, and then we recite the Bodhisattva vows, and then we recite the precepts, the 10 clear mind precepts. And we do this once a month. And please stay if you like. I wasn't going to talk too much this morning, partly because of my disability, and partly because I thought sometimes it's good if people want to ask questions or start some discussion. We can talk for a little while and then do our ceremony. But maybe some of you would like to share some of your own experience with practice or with pain or discomfort or inconvenience, and what some of your own opening has been to the possibilities of practice, regardless of circumstance. I realize that's asking you to be self-sharing, but it's all right. It's a safe place. Yes?
I was just going to say, you know, in the what we call the middle way, you know, which I originally heard described as kind of the middle way between, you know, extreme asceticism and indulgence, it's always struck me how relative that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's always a middle between, you know,
wherever you are.
Yeah, wherever
yeah.
you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the practices that I've, you know, the Zen practices that I've heard of, especially maybe in Japan and in Korea,
mm-hmm.
that sounded extremely, you know, almost, I mean, extremely extreme
mm-hmm.
to me,
mm-hmm.
and in fact turned my stomach.
Yeah.
I thought there's somebody that thinks that's the middle way.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because sacrificing the digits of your fingers and doing things like that, to me, that's, you know, asceticism taken to, you know, unnecessary length.
Yeah. But maybe.
But to somebody, that seems like the middle way, because probably because it didn't kill them or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can understand that if you, you know, if you spend time at Tassajara in the winter, sometimes it can be, you know, very difficult and cold, and one can be hungry and so forth. And at one time, I'm sure I would have thought that that was too extreme. But after some experience of it, I began to feel like, well, it's not so bad. You know, this is not as bad as I thought it would be when I contemplated it. And now that I'm in the midst of it, actually being hungry and kind of sleep deprived, it's no big deal. So maybe there are people who feel like, well, if my finger falls off, hey, you know, I've got nine others. What's the problem? I don't think I'll ever be there. But it is possible, as you say, the middle way is relative, although something about the atmosphere around some of these practices is something that I have now a great deal of difficulty associating with the Buddha Dharma. The anger and the kind of this bitter, you know, lock-jawed attitude towards it, this, I just, like, was Buddha like that? I don't think so. And the notion that, well, if we're like that, then we'll be like Buddha, it's like, there's no evidence that I can see. So I don't mean you sitting up here and complaining, if, as I say, if you encounter this extraordinarily bitter and toxic, to me, version of Zen or Buddha Dharma, be skeptical, be appropriately skeptical. Yes?
I think, though, in this country, we are far more likely to see something else, far more likely to see people who, I have friends who talk to me about, they're going to put a Buddha statue in a garden where they smoke weed.
Where they smoke
weed. And, you know, and then they'll smoke some weed with Buddha and things. And so, I mean, I think we see that a lot more often, but it doesn't have a school associated
with it. Yes, it's true, it doesn't have a school. It's true, I was online, I saw somebody who said that, he said something like, two eyedroppers full of cannabis tincture had enabled him to achieve a genuine Buddha trance. I'm not sure what that was, but that was his impression. So more power to him. But again, this whole notion of the middle way puts the ball, so to speak, in our court. So when am I indulging myself, and when am I torturing myself? And how do I steer away from both of those extremes, given the realities of my own karmic personality, my own this own body mind? What are the extremes, and how do I avoid them? And is it enough that Buddha said, you don't have to do this? I tried it. It wasn't worthwhile. Don't bother. So I take that very much to heart. Jennifer, did you
want to? Well, as I'm doing my quote, but actually something that Rin was saying brought to mind was an exemplar for me who was Quan Duc, from a Vietnamese monk who burned himself up, and he did a self-immolation during the Vietnam War.
During the war, yes.
And he was, I mean, he didn't move.
Yes.
He sat there. Right. And other monks later tried to replicate his practice, but
they fell over, and
they just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right. So his, when I sort of was looking at that a couple of years ago, and it's like his practice, I mean, when you look at the horrors of war, and the napalm, and the Agent Orange, and the dioxins, and I don't even know that he was specifically protesting death, it was more like the it was more political, plus the horrors of war. But,
right.
It is extreme.
It was extreme and extraordinary.
And extraordinary.
And that image is permanently in our human consciousness now.
And his disciple was like, he knew that his teacher was up to something. His disciple's name was Yi Yu Bu.
And he didn't know exactly what was going to happen.
Like, oh my God. And then after the emulation, I guess Quan Duc's heart didn't burn. I mean, he was burnt up, but that was sort of like a heartless left in town. Anyway, that.
Yeah.
That's an extreme practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those were extreme times, and some would say, well, they still are. We're still in the midst of extreme times. generally speaking, you know, if that turns out to be someone's path, then I don't speak against it.
Right.
But something tells me that this monk probably wasn't this bitter, angry person.
No, didn't feel like
exactly.
Yeah.
So there's already a big difference.
Yeah.
It's a big subject, a big topic. Yeah.
It seems that there's, in all of this, something about when something is imposed on one,
mm-hmm.
to take on these harsh practices,
mm-hmm.
or to measure up to these harsh practices,
mm-hmm.
and even when we tell ourselves in a harsh way to behave like that versus
yeah.
someone wholeheartedly stepping into something that you know, from an external view may look extreme, but that is, as you said, you know, that person's path.
Yes. Yes.
And that it's entered into
yeah.
with a, you know, with a full beating heart versus something that's bitter,
mm-hmm.
and tight.
Well, I think that may be, if I dare say, one of the strengths in Western practice, in that for instance, if you go to Tassajara, there are all kinds of degrees of severity that you can actually manage if you wish. So there are, for a while, I was, I would never eat dinner, just to try it, you know, not because that was particularly part of the schedule down there, but it is possible to, you know, sit up late at night if you wish, doing zazen, or not eat dinner. I do recall after that training period, where I wasn't ever eating dinner, I got the worst flu I'd ever had in my life after that. So like that was kind of interesting. But at the time, it didn't seem very extreme. And it was my choice. So there are various ways where one can explore some of these boundaries without being forced into it by somebody else, or browbeaten, or yelled at, or kicked, or screamed at, or something by somebody who's, I don't know what their issue is. That I don't think is so helpful. But for one to be able, in a sesshin or something, to explore some of these regions that might have seemed extreme before can be quite helpful and quite interesting. And then you are in charge of the laboratory. It's not somebody making you do something. So. Yes?
Can you also tell us the title of the book?
And this was called The Two Shores of Zen. Oh, no, I guess just Two Shores of Zen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by our old friend, Mark R.B., or Jiyu San, as he's now known. And it was, you know, there's a website called lulu.com, which is like a self-publishing website, which is pretty nifty. I don't know what the author has to pay, but the copies are only produced on demand, so you order it from their website, and then they will send you one. No, he couldn't get a regular publisher to publish it for him, so he went this route, and it's a very, very good read. It's a wonderful exposition of a real true practitioner's heart. It's really quite delightful, so I recommend it, and maybe we can talk about it some more if you want to. Are there more questions or comments? Want to share your experience of suffering? Oh, yes.
I'll share my experience of suffering. Just a little.
Sure, please.
I was just going to agree with you that, you know, I don't remember thinking during, you know, like all my kind of recent health, you know, like journey, you might
mm-hmm.
say. I don't know if I remember thinking, okay, I better start practicing now. It just seems like, you know, I was repeatedly grateful for my training.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, just over and over again,
mm-hmm.
I just thought, oh, I'm so glad that, you know, I'm so glad that I've had some practice
yeah.
in, you know, just staying with my body, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, not letting my mind run away with me,
mm-hmm.
or...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or that's not you know, the automatic impulse going
yeah,
on.
Just so. So, it,
so
mm-hmm.
I mean, over and over again, I thought that.
Right, exactly.
So,
me too. And it's important, you know, we're not talking about some weird little knack that we have because we were Tassajara or something. It's not that at all. It's just as Rin said, it's about the practice of presence, this body, mind, right now, that's all. And to return to that over and over again and discover the strength and power of that as an expression of Buddha Dharma is a real gift. And I totally recommend it to us all.
It's also,
yeah.
I mean, even more than that, it's
mm-hmm.
like it's a excellent sort of kind of like you might say survival mechanism because
yeah,
you know
the actual
experience that one is having at any given moment is never as you know I mean almost, I can't say never but you know it probably is not as you know as dire as
mm-hmm.
what one
imagines. Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what if this happens or
mm-hmm.
what if that happens?
Yeah.
You know, just no, just
what's here?
What's here right now?
What's here right
and
now?
Just deal with that.
This is called clarifying the eye of birth and death, and that's our practice. It's not different from Zazen. We're doing it now, and my only message is just keep at it and just keep at it and you will not regret it ever. And when you find yourself in a tight corner, there will be a particular spaciousness there also as a result of your practice if you just put your heart in it. Okay. So that's the good news. And now I guess we can have our ceremony, unless some other folks would like to make a comment or ask a question. Okay, so what's it, next week? Next week is the first Saturday of the month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have probably a half day retreat starting at 5:30 and ending at noon, and you're all invited. It's a great way to spice up your weekend, so to speak. So please sign up and please join us if you feel like it. And so we'll have our ceremony starting in probably just a few minutes, and Rin-san has kindly agreed to be Doshi, since I have a broken wing. And please stay if you like.